You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I'm Troy Olson. I'm joined by Mike and Jeff this week, and we're going to be guest-free, so if you listen for the guests, you can go ahead and click it off. We've already got your download. We're good to go. Mike, Jeff, how you doing?
Doing fantastic. We've got a full crew tonight.
Yep.
Not just Ingle and I rambling.
Well, and you get to do that again next week because I get to go pick up my mom and cover some spring training. So maybe I'll have some spring stuff for you. But this time next week, I will be in Phoenix picking up my mom and getting ready for some spring training games. I've went to our spring training expert, David Leske. You can follow him on Twitter, at DB Leske. He'll be there on the 5th. We may cross paths just briefly while we're there. But he's going to be down in Phoenix as well next week, so I'm sure the Pine Tar Press podcast is going to have some great stuff. And again, you get that all on our feed at Pine Tar Press, or Pine Tar Press, at RoyalsPodcast.com. Of course, join on iTunes and you get everything. So it's even more reason to be excited about what we're doing as a group here. This is the first year that we've been fully integrated like we are, and so I think it's going to be a really good spring training for everybody involved with RoyalsPodcast.com. But yeah, so that we'll have the guys next week. You got all three of us this week. It's just going to be a little bit of chatter this week. I'm going to go ahead and start off with probably the one subject that's going to make everybody cry a little. It made Randy Jazeera cry even in the comments to this tweet. But Ken Rosenthal tweeted, and I've seen this from other people, one source adds, Santana would rather sit out until after June draft than accept a deal similar to Cruz's compensation pick. Or similar to Cruz's compensation pick disappears after the draft. The Royals will get an additional first-round draft pick if Irvin Santana signs a deal before draft day. However, if he waits till after draft day, anybody can sign him for whatever money, and the Royals do not get that compensation pick. That was, I mean, a big reason for the Royals. You know, I shouldn't say it's a big reason for the Royals not signing him, but it's a big reason that the Royals held on to him as long as they did last year, because otherwise, I'm sure they would have found somebody to trade him to last year and just been done with it. But this is awful. This is, and his agent is a real jerk from the comments I read. I'm sorry, I don't like to call people names and stuff, and it's not like me to do so on this show, but he's just a piece of work. And he's absolutely intent on making sure he screws everybody he can in the process. And I can't remember the article I read, but his name's like Boob or something. Something weird. Let me find
his name
this.
Is Boob.
Talk amongst yourselves. Mike, what do you think about all this?
Oh, this is terrible if it goes down that way. I mean, we just talked a little bit last week about Ubaldo Jimenez and his contract with Baltimore, which he did pass his physical, so that's in there. And then shortly after that, the Orioles went and they signed Nelson Cruz to a one-year deal at $8 million, which is just ridiculous. I mean, you consider the qualifying offer was 1 year, $14.1 million. So he lost $6.1 million just right there because there was no market for him apparently. And so, you know, now you get into this point where it's pretty clear that that draft pick's doing a lot of damage for any kind of deal that Santana could get, which is why this is coming up that he could sit out until, you know, after the draft, because if there's no draft pick to give up by the signing team, then obviously they don't lose the draft pick. So I don't know. I mean, it seems like a very Royals kind of thing to happen to me. You know, they get this guy that you really think, hey, at least we're going to get a draft pick if we can't re-sign him. And then they may not even get that, which was kind of the point of doing the qualifying offer. It's kind of like last year, towards middle July, it almost looked like the Royals were going to bow out. And then they hit just that really hot stretch after the All-Star break. And that was enough to compel them to keep Santana, where I'm sure they could have traded him for something, you know, if they'd have fallen just a little bit further out. Instead, they went and won 16 out of 20 games and were right back in it, which I think any team is going to take. But still, where it sets them up now, where they could end up without Irvin Santana and without the pick that they would have otherwise gotten. So they're kind of stuck. Now, it's spring training, so anything could happen where, you know, a particular team gets an injury to a pitcher and suddenly he comes in. That's what happened last year with Kyle Loesch. He was in the similar situation, and teams weren't signing him, but they ended up signing him. Milwaukee signed him for 3 years because they needed to get him into the, you know, fill up the rotation. So he's actually sitting out on opening day. I'm not going to panic, but the closer it gets to the end of spring training, the more apprehensive I'm going to be that the Royals might end up empty-handed for what they, you know, the player that they maybe could have signed in the offseason. And I don't know. It's a very strange situation. You don't really see players hold out till after the draft that often, especially when they're, you know, in their early 30s.
Okay, I got to find it here. And Jeff, I'm going to go to you on your thoughts on this. But the post I'm looking for, his agent's Jay Lou. That's who I thought it was. But there's an article that good old Bob retweeted, and it talked about how three of the remaining free agents may hold out. And I just had to find it here. But Bob Dutton tweeted it originally, and sometimes digging through Bob's tweets takes a little while. Jeff, did you have anything to add to what Mike said?
The only thing is I think there are a couple of contributing factors to something like this happening that are kind of baseball's own fault, if you will. I think all the draft rules that have changed recently, I think, are factoring into this because, well, the draft rules, number one, and then the ridiculous nature of the escalating contracts and this whole out-of-whack economics of baseball, because you've got kind of these two warring things at play. You've got, in order to sign somebody, you have to pay them these exorbitant salaries, even if they're not worth it. You know, you look and even someone just like Jason Vargas. I mean, you know, is $8 million for a pitcher of his caliber unreasonable? Not really. But at the same time, you know, the Royals had to pay him $32 million to get him to sign. And you got, you know, people like Robinson Cano, who granted is one of the, you know, top 10 players in all of baseball, but all the same, you know, making crazy $240 million, whatever he's making. Clayton Kershaw making $300 million. And then the opposition to that is this idea that draft picks are becoming more valuable because you can have a player like, say, a Mike Trout or a Bryce Harper or somebody like that who's you know, an elite player that is young and controllable, you know, or even Eric Hosmer, for that matter, you know, someone who is very affordable even through arbitration, and you can control him for a while. But then not only are the draft picks more valuable for that, then it becomes more of, because of the draft cap issue, and then it becomes more of a, like before, I think teams were a little bit more willing to give up that draft pick because you could say, okay, well, we'll draft somebody later and we can pay him way over slot and make him, and you know, they'll still sign. Well, you can't really do that as effectively anymore because of the draft cap. So you really have to kind of monitor the draft, I think. So I just think those are kind of interesting dynamics at play that you've seen the last couple of years that I don't know that we've really seen in past history when it comes to players holding out or not signing and the draft pick being such a big issue as part of it.
Well, and so, okay, so the article that I had originally found is actually from Ken Rosenthal. And in here it lists might we soon see baseball's version? I'm going to read a lot of this article verbatim, which I don't normally do on this show, but this is a very good article. It's at msn.foxsports.com. If you search compensation free agents may hold out until after June draft, you should find it. Again, it's by Ken Rosenthal. It was from February 23rd, 2014 at 6:02 p.m. Hey, I'm making it easy for the people to find it. Might we soon see baseball's version of the four corners offense? The answer is yes. According to representatives for the three remaining compensation free, the answer is yes. According to the representatives for the three remaining compensation free agents, Bean Stringfellow, the agent for right-hander Irvin Santana, but then again, the guy on Jay Alou on Twitter is supposedly his agent, and I'm going to get to that in a second, said Sunday that the pitcher would consider holding out until after the amateur draft in early June if he does not receive an acceptable offer. Scott Boras, the agent for Stephen Drew and Kendrys Morales, has suggested the same thing. because they don't want to have to deal with this this contending offer. But I think it hurts the players. But again, from this article, it says even delaying these new deals until after opening day would benefit the players, as an eligible free agent cannot receive a qualifying offer unless he is with a team for an entire season, according to the collective bargaining agreement. So they could just wait until the third game of the season and join. But I've just, with a guy like Irvin Santana and his age, I would really like to see him in spring training and make sure that he doesn't have any off-season rust or anything. And you would think a guy in his age, but I mean, it's a lot to pitch in the major leagues, and to just come in without any sort of practice makes me real nervous, especially at the kind of money that these guys are going to make. And it does talk later on in the article that the big thing is they're really expecting to get two-year deals, one to avoid the problems with compensation picks this coming year. And actually, let me find it real quick. Boris is brilliant. You can say what you want about Scott Boris. The guy is brilliant. He is absolutely brilliant, and that is why he is a mega millionaire.
He's the best for a reason.
And he is the best at doing what he does. So, he says in here, estimating the value of... let's see here, where was it at? He said, Boris made a remark that... Oh, here, I'll just read it from Boris. This is how Boris explains it. A club first would keep its pick for 2014 if they signed these players to a multi-year deal. They'd keep their pick for 2014. The free agents fill a hole, enabling the club to avoid signing a compensation free agent and losing a pick in 2015. The club then becomes eligible for another pick by making free agent a qualifying offer at the end of his contract, assuming the system does not change when the current CBA expires after the 2016 season. Santana, Drew, and Morales, all of whom will be 31, ideally would want deals of three or more, extending through 2016. A roadmap for this strategy has been figured out, Boris says. There's a significant advantage under the system for teams to develop a plan to sign premium free agent players, the top 6 to 12%, where they can gain draft currency and also improve their team in the current and long term. A holdout, and then Rosenthal continues, a holdout by one or more of these compensation free agents until after the draft also could work to benefit the players long term if the union eventually seeks to alter or abolish the system. Obviously, the Royals would not be happy if they lost the pick they expected for Santana. Same goes for the Red Sox and Mariners. If select clubs share, if select clubs shared the players' discontent, it could help spark change. It also could it could also make it so that other players in the future don't accept qualifying offers. Actually, I take that back. Another possibility is the players will become more open to accepting qualifying offers in the future. Because Cruz is the first player ever, Nelson Cruz, who signed with the Orioles for $8 million, is the first player ever to sign a deal for less than the amount of a qualifying offer. It's just never happened. But the owners are kind of colluding that they don't want to give up draft picks, or GMs are, and in doing so, it's kind of burning teams, or they're just getting these players for much less. But I thought Cruz was stupid to not take the $14 million to begin with. Nobody wants to take a chance on a guy that's coming off a roids suspension the way that Cruz is, because you look at the players that have, and they've always had down years the next year. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, but I would not expect Irvin Santana back. There's another great article that was put out by our good friend Craig Brown, who actually would be a really good person for you guys to reach out to next week if you don't have a guest, and just have him chat with you guys, because he's just so smart and he's always good to have on the show. But there was an article that he put out called David Glass Doesn't Want to Bring Back Irvin Santana, and that was on February 12, 2014. So that was just, 12 days ago? And it was based because Sungwoo Lee, who is at @KoreanFan_KC, tweeted J. Lou saying, please make it happen. Please make it happen that Magic Irv is back in KC Royals. That's my Lunar Chinese New Year wish. And Jay Lou responded to him saying, if Glass wanted him, he would be a Royal by now. I know DM Ned and the fans want him. Payroll, trade someone, make it happen. Those were all hashtags by Jay Lou. So there is definitely some interest in getting him back to Kansas City, according to Jay Lou, who, again, is supposed to be his agent.
He said it, so you can decide if it's he's trying to play with the market and get something done sooner, or if he's just blowing smoke.
And then I guess he went on a tirade, last week about the Royals, Jay Lou did, and then deleted the tweets after the fact. But It
Yeah, those I didn't see, but
I didn't either, but I guess they're out there if you want to find them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The whole thing is pretty crazy. I don't really know what to make of it. I would hesitate to put a ton of stock into what the agent of the player in question is saying, just because he has such a vested stake in what's going to happen. But it does kind of fit the script, you know, in a way. But at the same time, I mean, I don't really know that. I don't know. It's just such a complicated and weird thing. It seems like every week it changes with a different update. Something else happens and it changes. So, I don't know. By this time next week, it could be completely different. It'd be nice if the Royals would just get out in front of it and say, okay, well, if you're going to hold out, and then, you know, just throw 2 years, $20 million at them. You know, find a way to make it happen. Take a small loss this year for the potential for some wins this year, which could be, you know, extra season ticket sales. It could be more ticket sales in general. It could be more merchandise sales if they win five more games than they did last year. So, you know, all those things could go into it, and it's just, I don't know. Maybe there's just something else. Maybe it's something completely different, or maybe it's the agent. Maybe they're not convinced he's healthy. Maybe it's a little bit of everything.
I don't know. It's just frustrating because first off, if these guys do that, it's changing the face of baseball. And honestly, the players, at least these three players, did not negotiate in good faith when it comes to the collective bargaining agreement, because the players union accepted this, and the players should follow, you know, what the union has lined out for them. And I don't feel like they're doing that in this case if these three hold out. And I think the union should kind of put their thumb down and say, hey, you know, this is not going to be good for – because if
– union's not going to do that, though, because the union wants everybody else to make their money, and
sure,
everybody, you know, else is.
But you know what? If I'm Major League Baseball coming that collective bargaining agreement in 2016, I say, fine. You know what, guys? We've done this before, you know, have a good extra time off. And being a fan, I wouldn't be mad at the owners for it, because I think the players have gotten way too much in the last 10 or 15 years. And this negotiation that's coming up in 2016 is going to be the worst one ever. Mark my words, because you have a new leader of the MLB and you have a new leader of the players union, and they're both going to want to write their legacy. And they're going to want to write it in 2016. If there's not a strike or a lockout, I will be shocked.
Yeah, okay, I can see that. But is a strike or a lockout the best way to start your legacy?
But they're both going to be so far apart, because they're going to want to show, look what I did for the players. Look what I did for the owners. Look what, you know, because nobody's saying, look what I did for baseball, because that's not on anybody's mind. Let's get real.
Well, yeah.
You know, it is what it is. But we are going to be in for some interesting times in 2016, I think. I think people better plan on their T-Bones tickets. And, I mean, if baseball strikes to the minor league strike, I don't remember the last time. Following minor leagues back then.
Golly, I don't know. I was 14.
Yeah, see, you know, I would have been about the same, so I'm going to have to look that up. Let's get on. We'll start on the next topic, and then I'll jump out on that. First off, I haven't heard the show yet, but Andy McCullough, who is at MCCULLOUGH star, STAR, replaced Bob Dutton, if you didn't know this. If you didn't, where the hell have you been?
Right.
Especially if you're somebody that listens to this show, you've got to be on Twitter, I would think, or at least enough involved with the Royals community that you'd know that. He is a must-follow. He is – I hate to say this, and I'm going to get yelled at probably by people, but he's as good as Dutton. And he understands Twitter a little bit better. And I haven't seen him reply as well. And he definitely doesn't have Dutton Stark. But like somebody actually said because Andy tweeted today. First off, he's on Pine Tar Press. Listen to that show. He posted a game recap today. I'm going to get to that in a second. But in the game recap, one person even said Dutton never got this deep, and somebody else said I like it. And it really it really is a good point that McCullough really does do a really good job. So I'm really pleased with the way that the Star went with their decision. Now, what he talked about today was there was a simulation game today, and Ventura started against Hochaver, which just the thought of Hochaver even starting in a simulation game made me shiver. But he tweeted, game recap, Ventura labored, Peguero homered, Maxwell tripled, I got subtweeted, and we all crept a little closer to the inevitable end. Now, I'm not sure what the inevitable end is, and I don't know what he got subtweeted about, but but I will say this. I got tweets from a good follower of mine. Let me see if I can draw to him real quick. But he talked about, oh, we should trade Kane in a package for a starter. Okay, first off, you're going to have to give up Kane and, I don't know, somebody like Ventura to get the kind of starter that we need, which doesn't really help us in any way, and it would probably be too much in the end. But I'm trying to find this tweet really quick. But he's all in on Peguero, this follower of mine is. And I'm definitely not there.
Nor should you be.
Right. Okay, so he's at hopeful FB walk-on. It's a lot of letters.
All right.
He says, we need Peguero to get at bats. Could be next Batista. I'd put him in right field and trade Kane and package for SP. Well, I don't know what the outfield's going to look like this year, but isn't Kane going to spend more time in center, don't you think?
Yeah.
And at least has the ability to be in center. So that's problem number
one. He's elite in center. Around the All-Star break, he was leading the Royals in wins above replacement, mostly because of his defense. That's including All-Star Sal Perez. That's including clubhouse presence James Shields. That's including Alex Gordon and Eric. Everybody. He led the entire team at that point. And a large part of his defense.
I think Mellinger even wrote an article about how he was the Royals MVP, or at least should have been. So
yeah, but he can't stay healthy, and that, I think, yes, is going to continue to be a problem.
It could be. It's possible. They say that they're working on things for him. But at the same time, I mean, every team in baseball knows that. So Kane really probably doesn't have a whole lot of trade value, frankly. I mean, he hasn't hit that much. His defense is great, and I think teams would love him for that, but I don't think they'd be giving up any kind of frontline starter for a guy like Kane unless you're giving up, you know, some significant names from the minor leagues, which, you know, who knows who's even on the market or anything like that. I don't anticipate any kind of trade, especially not to put Peguero in there, who is very much unproven, and history is not kind of players of his caliber.
Yeah, Peguero is not good, you guys. He has really good power, but I guess if you want a guy that's going to hit 220 and hit 30 home runs, maybe at Kauffman in a miracle type situation,
and still you only have a Peguero 280 on base percentage.
Right.
He's still going to make an out most, you know, 3/4 of the time.
I mean, he would be a poor man's Jeff Francoeur with a little more power. And nobody wants that, let's be real. And I forgot what else I was going to go look up.
Yeah.
I already forgot, so I'm not going to go look that up.
Yeah, Peguero does not walk. He strikes out a lot. He's got crazy power when he makes contact, and that's kind of the key. You have to make contact with the ball, or else your power doesn't do anything, and that's pretty much what he's done. There's a really good article on his FanGraphs page that talks about Peguero and comparing him to other players, and there's basically one player that fits his profile that amounted to much of anything. And the rest really never did anything of any kind of import. So you can't rely on Peguero. I would rather take a fragile Lorenzo Cain with less power than Peguero any day. And that's an easy, easy pick on my part.
Yeah, I'm not getting into. I'm not willing to. The other overreaction, which honestly people didn't overreact to as much as I thought they might, but Ventura labored, which means he just didn't have his good stuff. But it is the first day of
He labored on the 24th of February against Lorenzo or Gerard Dyson, who's pretty decent at working the count, and Billy Butler, who's similarly very good at working the count. I'm not gonna worry about that.
Yeah. If it's April 24th and he's laboring, then we've got a concern. But yeah.
No, we don't, because he'll be in Omaha. If he's having trouble, he'll be in Omaha. If he doesn't get through spring training looking good, he'll be in Omaha.
Because, well, yeah.
I mean, it's
just we're talking about February 24th. Though.
Right, right. We're not.
Saying if he gets through and it's April 24th and he's laboring at that point after making the team, then yeah. that's when you worry. Right now, you don't worry.
Yeah, and
March 24th, you can worry.
Speaking of laboring, well, we can. I'm going to pull this segue from you, Troy, since it's out there. But the Royals are talking about how they're going to possibly have Kyle Zimmer last through the season, right? And where they're going to, I wasn't able to read the article in full detail, but Mike, maybe you can elaborate a little bit on, they want to stop him weightlifting, is that right?
Yeah, they want him to throw less, and they want him to cut down on weightlifting, which is very much an old school kind of things. I don't know why. I think people think that the muscle makes everything inflexible or tense or tight or something. I'm not sure, but I mean, I would think that if you're weightlifting and you're not overdoing it, you're not straining yourself, there's shouldn't be any reason why that would hurt anybody. I mean, you're strengthening yourself. That's seems like a good thing to do. I know, and maybe we should talk to Scobes about this at some point, because you know, some of the training that he's done involves, you know, a lot more weightlifting and a lot more throwing, and which is completely the opposite of what the Royals are doing here. And you know, there's certain schools, Jaeger is one of them, and Driveline Bases is another one, where they have shown results in developmental players using things like weightlifting and throwing more, things like that. So I don't know. It's concerning because the Royals seem to continue to do the same things with the same pitchers all the time. Granted, they should be concerned a little bit about Zimmer because he did have the bone chips and the shoulder last year, the bone chips the year before and the shoulder last year, neither of which anybody really seems to think are going to be, you know, long-term problems. But when you have one problem and then another problem, then it's, you know, that's kind of where a concern comes from. So I don't know how it's going to work out. I would rather see him throwing and be ready to go. Maybe they can scale him down a bit, but it almost seems like they expect him to be able to jump in April, the end of April, and be ready right away for the minor league season, which if he's not throwing regularly, then I don't know how his arm's going to be conditioned to be ready to go from that point. So it's kind of...
And there's... Let's also not forget, this is something where, you know, we know that Kyle Zimmer, you talked about, like, the Alan Jaeger, that Driveline Baseball, that, and the, I think it's, is it Ron Woolworth or whatever, down in the Texas Baseball Academy or whatever?
Yeah,
down
there. Yeah.
And, yeah. I mean, they have that similar kind of philosophy, and Kyle Zimmer comes from that school. If I remember correctly, I talked to Alan Jaeger after the Royals drafted him, and the coach at the University of San Francisco, where Zimmer went to college, was a disciple of a disciple of Jaeger. So, you know, somebody who came, basically, the point being ultimately that he comes kind of from that school. He was big. I remember Jaeger telling me he was like a 330-foot long tosser in college. So, I mean, he's out there. He comes from that idea of wanting to, you know, work it out, to let it grow and everything. So, and I do believe, if I remember correctly, that was in his contract with the Royals, that he would be allowed to long toss and continue his own program. You know, that said, I mean, you know, if a major league program or a major league franchise is going to give you advice, you're probably going to take it, especially a younger guy like him. So it'll be interesting to see how much of their advice he takes and how much of it, you know, adversely affects him, because it is something where we've seen and we've, you know, heard from not only people like Alan Jaeger, but we had Jason Parks on the show and those people that have seen from experience that when you kind of rev yourself up from a training standpoint and you're used to training and throwing and training and throwing, and then you get scaled back down, you know, that's when injuries happen. It's not when the overuse. I mean, obviously there's always a point where you can't, you know, you can't throw 1,000 pitches a day or something like that, you know, but at the same time, it's like you said, Mike, you know, there's you got to keep that arm active and growing. And it's, you kind of wonder where does that information come from, or where what is their line of thinking where they say, I mean, you obviously have the kind of common sense of, you know, oh, if you're sick or if you're tired or if you sprain your ankle or something, then you just rest and you get off it and you don't use it. And so, I mean, there is that kind of conventional wisdom, but that's you and me. You know, we don't run a franchise baseball organization that has medical doctors and experts and opinions at their disposal that can come in and give them this information. And from what we've heard, you know, from different sources, the Royals just don't, not only do they not have it, but they don't want it. People have tried to give them these different information and differing viewpoints, and they've just rejected it. And it's kind of sad, but at the same, this is another one of those little things where it seems innocuous, and we kind of blow it up on this show and we talk about it like this, and people kind of shake their heads and they say, oh, we're just being nerdy fanboys talking about stupid whatever. But, you know, I mean, if you look at it and they scale Kyle Zimmer back and then they ramp him up in June, hoping him to get him up by July or August, and then he ends up having Tommy John or he ends up having, you know, some other injury, you know, then where are they at? And I mean, that's, you know, these things are realistic possibilities when you kind of mess with a player's program like that. And so it's something where it just kind of starts out small, and then next thing you know, there's a major problem, and then, oh crap, the Royals are short one pitcher. Where do they go from there? And now everybody's mad at the Royals again because they can't develop pitching. And it's like, well, you know, they could have stopped this problem, and you could have fixed it, but they just don't see it, and they, more importantly, they refuse to see it. You know, I mean, it seems like from what we've heard, they're getting a little bit better and a little bit more open to these things, but hearing that they want to scale Kyle Zimmer back and they don't want him to lift weights and they don't want him to do the things that he's been doing to make him successful is disheartening, because that's what they did with Mike Montgomery. You know, that's what was part of his downfall. He had a program, he had a method that he was using. The Royals toyed with it. They didn't let him do what he needed to do. They didn't let him do what made him so successful that they spent a high draft pick on him. And he flamed out, and he's probably never going to be in the major leagues again. And that's not all necessarily on the Royals, but a lot of it is. And, you know, I just don't – you don't want this to be step one of a 10-step thing that ends up with Kyle Zimmer having a 6.5 ERA in Double A by the end of 2014. Sorry, that was a little bit more than I anticipated. But well, sometimes you just get rolling. You know, you can't stop it.
Well, their old habits die hard, and it's easy to get worked up over them because, you know, if they can develop a pitcher, you don't trade Will Myers.
Yeah.
And then there you go. You know.
And if they could develop a pitcher, they could prove me wrong, and I wouldn't have anything to complain about.
Right. And then, you know, you're not paying $13 million on James Shields. Maybe you can sign somebody else. Maybe, you know, all kinds of different options open up. But they had to allocate resources in a completely different way, and because of some of those shortcomings on the development side.
Yeah, and I mean, if you just as an aside to that, you know, with, I mean, if you think about the Royals, they had the best farm system in the history of ever, right, in 2011.
Right.
And five pitchers on the top 100 list. And Danny Duffy's the only one who started a major league game, and he is still a huge question mark and largely unproven. So, I mean, the only other one that spent any... Actually, I take that back. Jake Odorizzi has started a game, hasn't he?
Yeah.
In the major leagues. So yeah. He's not with the team anymore, so that doesn't really count. I mean, it only kind of counts, but...
Two of his starts count.
Yeah. So, and, you know, who knows how he's going to do with the Rays, but... So, I mean, that... You know, if they would have hit on two of those guys, you know, if Danny Duffy wouldn't have had his injury problems and would be who we kind of thought he would be, and then John Lamb would have turned out or Mike Montgomery would have turned out, they wouldn't be in this position. They probably wouldn't have had to trade Will Myers, just like you said, and, you know, they wouldn't have to be putting all their stock in the Yordano Venturas and the Kyle Zimmers of the world, and, you know, things might be a little bit brighter, actually, going forward, but, you know, what are you going to do, I guess?
Yeah, exactly. Apparently, yeah, that covers it. You know, and that's not the first time that your dog's done that, Jeff. There's been a couple of times that I, like, the episode, I think, that I wasn't on a couple weeks ago, you guys were talking about something, and you said something very, like, thought-provoking and what have you, and then your dog just barked, like, in agreement. And I was like, well, that was perfectly timed, and then nobody mentioned anything about it. I was like, well, that was a missed opportunity. So I just kind of laughed to myself.
Hear, hear.
Well, hear, hear. See, when we don't have a podcast, then I just ramble about Royals pitching failures to my dog, so he obviously agrees.
Let's take a quick break and reset ourselves here, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about some positive things, like that Jeffrey Flanagan may drink more of the blue Kool-Aid than I do. We'll be right back on the other side.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
Oh, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, and you drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Libidotosis.
Yep.
All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl game. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go.
And
one
back in
the
Kansas City Baseball Vault. Jeff had to step out for just a minute, so he'll rejoin us here in a little bit. We're going to talk about some positive stuff, and we may also break away to more about the pitching conversation if Kevin Scobie has a chance to join us. If not, I might just have to type out the question for him during our next break, and then we'll talk about it. But in other news, Jeffrey Flanagan, who works for Fox Sports Kansas City. Now, is this guy on the air? Or is he just a behind-the-scenes writer?
He's just a writer. He used to be a beat writer with the Royals, with the Star covering the Royals.
Okay.
But now he covers them for Fox Sports Kansas City's, their blog, their website.
It's interesting how far along bloggers have come, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that, I don't know. I wonder how they term it, but I wouldn't call him a blogger so much. They would consider him a reporter.
Well, sure, but I mean, let's call it what it is. He writes for a website.
Yeah,
it's a blog. I don't care if
it's not a print medium. So you know, there you go.
It's just like Mellinger's got a blog. It's a great blog. It makes him money, but it's still a blog. Regardless, so Jeffrey Flanagan has an article out on February 21st, 2014, at 1:21 p.m. Again on MSN.FoxSports.com. This one's on the Kansas City side, obviously. Flanny's 5, Reasons the Royals Will Make the Playoffs. First off, there's a picture on here that I'm sure Kevin Scobie just loves because Alex Gordon looks absolutely ripped in it.
Yeah, seriously, just go to the site just for the picture. Like, my goodness.
I think after all this MLB Fan Cave stuff is over, this may be my AVI picture and my my background. I mean, it's a pretty good picture.
That
so.
Is, like, if I looked like that, my goodness, I wouldn't pay for a drink anywhere.
Well, and I'm sure he doesn't either.
I'll
guarantee you this. He lives in Lincoln, so if he's ever out anywhere...
Yeah, he doesn't really have...
he's one of the most... Well, yeah, I'm going to say one of the most famous people in Lincoln because occasionally Warren Buffett comes over to Lincoln, and he would be the most famous person in Lincoln anytime that he's there.
Warren Buffett probably doesn't have to pay for his drinks either.
Probably owns
all the drinks.
Well, I was going to say, and even if he does, it doesn't matter. he's a whole other story for another day, but him giving away his fortune to charity just is so awesome and blows my mind. But that's another story for another day.
Yes.
Anyways, so 5 reasons that Kansas City's going to make the playoffs. Real briefly, and then I'll stop after each one of these and let Jeff and Mike jump in because Jeff's back now on each of these. Big game. Reason number one, big game James. As good as James Shields was for the Royals last season, and he was really good, there's an excellent chance he could be better. Jeffrey Flanagan predicts a Cy Young type of season. Obviously, it's the final year, and he wants to get paid. And we talked about that last week, that he wants a Greinke type deal in the $147 million range. And Mike talked about how it's very possible he could get that kind of deal because he may be the only arm on the market. And, again, if he has a great year... But as Flanagan said, Shields is smart and he knows this is an opportunity to get mega rich. This will benefit the Royals in the short term and certainly aid their push towards the playoffs. Anything to add to that, Jeff?
No. I mean, I think we knew that once they made the trade for Will Myers for quote unquote big game James, then it was playoffs or bust, and kind of Dayton Moore's job was riding on it. So he's been the key to this whole push for 2014 all in. So that pretty much summed it up, and the added wrinkle of it being a contract year, and you know him being a not as crowded market next year, so he could be really rich, is something that I hadn't really looked into before, but definitely relevant. So things are stacking up for definitely to be an important season for James Shields.
Mike?
Yeah, I mean, he's had Cy Young caliber seasons in the past, and last year was a really good season as well. He just didn't have, you know, the wins on his resume because he didn't get any run support in the first half of the season. You know, if he gets regular run support, I mean, yeah, maybe he ends up with, you know, five or six more wins, and maybe the Royals make the playoffs, you know, last year. So I definitely think he could do that. It would be, you know, he'd have to continue some of the things from last year and still, you know, have that kind of caliber year and then some, but he's definitely done it in the past, so there's no reason to think that, you know, he's going to just flame out or anything. See?
That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
Excellent point.
Definitely.
Hold that thought, though, because I'm bringing into the call Tom Cruise. No, that's just his picture. It's actually Kevin Scobie. Kevin, you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Now, we were talking about a certain article by Jeffrey Flanagan that I figured had a picture that made me excited.
Oh, are you not? Come on. This is really what I'm on the phone for.
No, you're not. You're actually on here to talk about the Fitchers. But this is what's okay. Funny. So I bring up Scobie's profile on Twitter because I knew he had made a remark. I thought I'd read in here once that his last line is podcast guest, which makes me laugh every time I read it. But I bring up Scobie's profile, and guess what picture he's using as his AVI? And I didn't even realize it. It's that picture of Alex Gordon.
Is it the Gordon
yes.
one?
Yes.
I don't blame him.
He's
good
got
God.
It cropped out. But the reason we brought Kevin Scobie on is because, as he says himself, he used to train his bio in Twitter probably explains it as best as anybody can. Scobie used to train pitchers. Now he complains about them, and he was a Kansas City Royals blogger, or is a Kansas City Royals blogger occasionally, and he's a podcast guest. And we like to claim that we were one of the first ones to have him on as a podcast guest, and he is a pretty smart guy, too. We give him a hard time about the Alex Gordon stuff, but because it's fun. But I'm going to let Mike ask the question again, because he asked it the first time, I won't mention it as well. But Mike, go ahead and take us back to where we were in the first segment.
Well, yeah, what we talked about in the first segment was about Kyle Zimmer and the Royals' plans for him, and obviously he's had the injury problems, you know, with the shoulder and the bone chips the year before. But what the Royals were talking about as far as their approach to getting him ready for the season and for about 150 innings or whatnot, they are asking him to streamline his throwing program, and they're asking him to reduce his weightlifting. Now, I know you've had, you know, extensive training in both for yourself and with other people, and I wanted your reaction to that kind of thing.
I mean, other than just maniacal laughter, I guess.
That'll work, too.
I haven't had a conversation. Like, Kyle Bodie's a guy that does the driveline baseball. I think he's out of Seattle somewhere in there, and he and I always trade emails about.
Oh, I did not lose him.
Uh-oh. Quick!
He's still showing up as on there.
Yeah, he's just quiet all of a sudden. Oh, now there's a problem with the call. I wonder if my internet's having a moment. Are you guys still there?
Yeah,
still here.
Interesting.
Having no issues. Maybe it's his internet.
It must be. No, I get to edit this out.
Well, fun. We can get it back in. We can just have him take off.
There we are.
There we go. I don't know what happened there, but Kevin's on the... at a mile high as well. He's up in the Colorado area. He's not in beautiful California anymore. He's in beautiful Colorado instead.
So I am not.
Maybe they had some wind this week. that's a drawback to an earlier show. Disregard. Anyways, so you were talking. Go ahead and take off where you're talking about. You were talking about how you were trading emails with the guy.
Yeah, Kyle. He sent me an email about a guy's initial arm system. I'm not sure if he was like a client of his or just somebody that was looking into his program and kind of what he does up there. And just, it went through this whole story about how he was drafted and he got out of high school and was told to change his throwing program and do this and that, and then experienced a lot of elbow pain and shoulder pain and never really felt right. And then 3 years after being in the program and going through this, had to have surgery, and turns out he was a Royals foreman. Which doesn't surprise me. It's not all that dissimilar from other things that I've heard from guys that I know that were either scouting amateurs that ended up getting individually getting drafted by the Royals, or guys that I knew sort of secondhand that were in the Royals farm system. The idea of lifting being bad is something that it was always preached to me, especially in season. In season, lifting is always bad. And it was something that was preached to me a lot, especially when I was probably 18 to 22, 23 in there. There's no science behind it. There's almost literally no science behind it at all. There are certain kind of lifting that you probably shouldn't do. Like, you shouldn't go overboard and lift a ton, because you do have a lot of joints that you have to worry about. But the idea that you shouldn't lift and lift heavy just because you're a pitcher is asinine. You should lift heavy. Lifting heavy is the only way that, one, you can either maintain your weight the best, but you're also trying to build strength. And somewhere along the line, people equated throwing a baseball with endurance running and, like, lean builds, and that's not the case. Those two things aren't mutually exclusive. And so to take a guy who was – the reason you drafted him is because he was a position player that was in shape and took care of his body, and he had an electric arm, and now you're going to change him. Which makes perfect sense, because that's what the Royals do. It's what they did with Luke Cochaver, and I mean, that's what they've messed around with Danny Duffy. It's what they did with Montgomery. This is just kind of their thing, and it happens when you have Bill Fisher, that is your pitching guy, that you've sort of asked him to be the one that's supposed to lead your program or have input in your program. There's no science behind it, and this goes back to what the SI article that about Dylan Bundy, about how he sat with the Royals and told them how the shoulder worked. I mean, that's incredible to think that a professional organization that has the funds to put behind any research they could think of, and here's some 18-year-old telling them how the shoulder works and why he long tosses and why he lifts heavy and why he does these things. It's completely unsurprising that they would take this track with Zimmer, and it's unsurprising that they say that, well, he has some injury problems, so then we must change what he does now, because it's completely reactionary. There's nothing proactive about what the Royals do in the development system. It's all, well, this happened, therefore we must change this now. And that's just not right, and especially when you talk about pitchers. He shouldn't change his lifting schedule. If anything, I'd want to say, if the tendonitis in his elbow is a byproduct of him taking X amount of months off from throwing, which is the first thing that I would always ask from somebody that's experienced elbow problems or shoulder pain, is how many months off did you take from throwing? Because if you're not throwing every day, then you're going to have problems. And that's also one of the byproducts of a failed development of the system with pitching, is that they think that you should sit for 3 months and then come back and try and throw, and you could be at 100% again.
Well, and on that same note, I mean, I don't know if this was the Royals dictating this or if this was his choice, but at a certain point, Yordano Ventura told Josh Vernier that he hardly threw in the off season because he wanted to go to 200 innings. Which, to me, it seems like you're going to try to get off the couch and then go run, you know, half marathon. And I don't know a lot of people that can actually go do that. I've read enough to this point that, you know, seeing both sides, I kind of buy into the Jaeger model of, you know, feed the arm, mm-hmm. keep using it. I mean, that can't be good, right? I mean, is there any upside to that that approach to trying to save yourself to go for 200 innings?
No. That's why whenever I read that same tweet that Vernier put out, and I think I tweeted back, this is the exact wrong way to go about doing this. The idea that to rest your arm is going to save your arm, I guess it's a decent idea in theory, but I mean, take what, like, Olympic sprinters. You think they don't sprint for 2 weeks before the Olympics? No, they're sprinting every day. Like, your rest isn't weeks and weeks upon end. It's a day or so here, but it's not. Resting the arm only slows it down. It only sets you back. It's just one of those, it's just part of the organization. It's just kind of one of those things. You read stuff about the way this team, this organization does their pitching and they develop their pitching, and it just kind of makes you smirk and go, yep, okay.
Let's talk about Shamania as well, because if you watch video of him, he's kind of funky in his delivery. And, you know, had some injuries, ankle problem, hip problem, led to a shoulder problem. So how much of that is the ankle? How much of that is the way that he throws the ball? And is that something that is fixable? And then it's tenuous to say this. Can the Royals fix that?
No.
loaded question.
Yes, you set me up for that one. I don't like him. I'm not a fan. I don't like the videos I've seen. I don't like the way he throws. I don't like his deficiencies with the way his trunk moves. I don't like his arm action. I really do not like how his hips work. And the funny thing is, it's kind of like a self-fulfilling thing when you talk about a guy that throws low to mid-90s, especially as a left-hander, and you say, well, this is deficient, and they always go, well, he must be doing something right. He throws 92, 94. Yes, because genetic freaks are out there. Like, guys are allowed to throw hard and still have bad mechanics. So that's just how it goes. But that doesn't mean you don't have bad mechanics. Freddie Garcia has awful mechanics, and he broke down eventually. Roy Halladay has bad mechanics. He broke down eventually. I mean, these kind of things happen. But they also were really good at one point, because you're allowed to be a genetic freak, and that's what most of these guys are. I'm not a fan of Manaea. I didn't understand the uproar because I looked at him how I look at pitchers. I didn't understand the uproar because I know the Royals and how they look at pitchers, and he fits their model.
I don't have anything else. I just really wanted to bring Kevin on to literally ask him the question that you had said, hey, we should ask Scobie this, and I thought, let's ask Scobie this if we can. Really quick, one thing that we were trying to reach back on in the first as well is we were trying to remember if the minor leagues continued to play during a strike, because we talked about how in 2016 when the CBA comes up again, just simply because of how the three current major free agents are playing the system and may wait to sign until after the draft and may change the way that the intent of the collective bargaining agreement was, it could be interesting to see what this new leader, this new commissioner and this new leader for the Players Association do and how they decide to define their legacies and if we could end up in another strike or lockout, which I think is very, very possible. Excuse me. And we were trying to remember if the minor leagues continued to play. And I reached out to Omaha Baseball. He didn't remember, Lee Warren. He didn't remember offhand. He directed me to one of the guys with the World Herald. But before he could respond, our good friend Jack at Royal DUF did respond. And he said that he recalled they did continue playing. And not only did they continue playing, but players that were down on rehab assignments actually did their rehab assignments as well. So I guess if there were a strike, you'd at least have minor league baseball to go to, and that's good for me because I'm in a minor league city. So, but I can't imagine, because I thought that was right, because if I remember right, Fox had like a major baseball contract, like it was like Sunday Night Baseball or whatever, and they were going to show, or they did show AAA games during their Sunday Night Baseball broadcast on national TV, whatever the hottest minor league teams were at the time, probably teams for the Yankees or whoever. It's hard to say, but so we did reach back on that, and we found that out too. See, we tell you we're going to find something out on this show, and we go out and get it, and we go out and ask Kevin Scobie to come on so we can talk about Alex Gordon and pitchers, because we always have to talk about Alex Gordon when Scobie's on.
Sure.
Scobie, are you ever going to get that good Twitter handle that you want? You think that guy's ever going to respond to you?
No, man, that jerk never responds to anything. I don't know, how are you going to have a Twitter handle and not answer your mentions? And how are you just going to have a Twitter handle when a guy says, hey, man, I want that Twitter? No, he won't do it.
Scobie is at Scobie15. He wants to be at Scobie. Scobes15. Or at Scobes15, I'm sorry. He wants to be at Scobes, but this guy has like 4 followers, and he never uses his account, never tweets, never responds. But unfortunately, Twitter doesn't have like an inactivity clause where accounts would go away or anything, which would be great.
Do you want Royals report? I have that.
Yeah, really.
You can borrow that if you want it.
We got to figure out something to do with that, because a whole bunch of people followed that account too, right?
Like 20, and then I put it on lockdown because I, you know.
You felt dirty?
I just
you're not that guy.
I have that thing where I want, you know, people to get good information, and I don't want to mislead them. So
you get for being a decent human being, Michael.
I know. I'm trying to cut it, but it just keeps happening.
So, Scobie, do you and Sarah have things to do, or do you want to stick around with us for a little bit?
I have dinner to eat because I just got home from work, and then we're putting the baby to the bed, so I'll probably play with her for a little bit.
Go do that. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you for not asking me about Mike Moustakas. I can't take much more of that conversation today.
Oh, really? No, we weren't. We try to stick to the pitchers with you unless we're having you on as like a regular guest or whatever, and then we'll throw everything at you. But
at least we didn't ask about Gordon hitting fifth.
Oh, please don't. Oh, my God.
That's actually the next thing in the show. That's why I asked if you wanted to stick around. That's the next thing I'm hitting on. Because it's in Flanagan's five reasons why the Royals are going to make the playoffs. Number one was big game James. Number two is filling the black holes, which the Royals have somewhat done. And then number three is Alex Gordon. And he says, maybe we're putting too many expectations on Gordon to have a monster year. But I, being Jeffrey Flanagan, do believe that now that he has a fixed role in the middle of the order, he's headed for his best season in the majors. And then he talks some more about that. So I guess you're not getting that feeling, Kevin?
It's... I don't know.
Next, we're going to talk about the Oxford comma.
Oh, my God.
you better go put the baby to bed while you can.
Probably got to get away.
she's looking at me whining. All I got to say is, like, there's no guarantee Infante's even going to be a halfway decent offensive player. He hasn't been through his entire career. He had one good year. He was 32 as a contract year. And all of a sudden we're expecting him to be some sort of 120 OPS plus guy hitting two? No, it's not going to pay. So why are you putting Gordon in fifth? Whatever. I got to go.
You're such a beam of light in the Royals universe, Kevin.
Somebody has to be, I guess.
Go follow him at Scobes15. He's actually a pretty good Twitter follow. He's pretty funny, and he's worth the follow. So, anyways, Kevin, thank you so much for jumping on with us. We'll talk to you later.
Bye, guys.
Bye. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Oh, my goodness.
Tell me if this might describe your situation. You're a Royals fan. You have been your whole life. It's been a long road, but you think the team is about to turn the corner. But then it's the winter, and your wife starts to nag you about how much football you're watching. She says she wants to be fair. She says you need to rake the leaves. Suddenly, everything you've worked for is all on the table. The television, the DVR, the case of beer. Might I suggest to you another alternative? You need to go down and have a cold beverage at Kelly's Westport Inn. Hell, bring the wife along. If it doesn't work out, it's been named one of the top places to pick up single guys. Maybe you'll both get lucky. Whatever you do, get out of the house. Get down to Kelly's Westport Inn. The choice of a laid-back bar is an important one, and should not be made solely on podcast advertising alone. Kelly's Westport Inn and the Royal Man Report. Partners
Welcome
you
back
can
into
count
the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Kevin Scobie, always fantastic, at Scobes15. I did not expect that last... I always kind of expect something like that from Kevin. He's got so much good information, but I didn't expect that direction from him. I guess I haven't been following his tweets or conversation close enough, but that was too funny that Jeff, you could not have planned that better. I don't know if you'd looked at the article or not, but just to say that and set him off that way was so perfect.
He tweeted something about it earlier today, and I basically trolled him and played devil's advocate, and it was pretty funny. So that's why I brought it up.
Oh, that was perfect. That was radio gold. Hey, I guess apparently Flanagan in one of his Flanny Fives from the 17th made a remark that Peguero could be the next Jose Bautista. So I guess
that's where it comes from.
Okay,
yeah. It was one AL scout. I don't know. I know from talking to Lesky, you could probably guess what AL team that was.
Talking to Lesky. Oh, okay. I could probably guess, but I'm not.
Yeah, I'll give you. can narrow it down by division if you want to guess.
That's all right. Anyways, the last two on this, because I want to get off this topic, is the Vargas edition. He thinks that's a really good thing. I don't really agree with that. And closing the gap on the Tigers. Now, I do think that is going to happen. I think without Jim Leland, I think that makes a difference. I don't think the Tigers are as good this year as they were last year. I think they're still very good. I still think they're better than the Royals. But I think the division is not as good this year as it was last year. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really like Ian Kinsler that much. I think he's going to have some power, but I don't know how well it's going to play in their park for most of his season. And plus, the AL Central is, you know, not really a great home run hitting spot. And, you know, they traded Doug Fister for some reason. Boredom, I don't know. I literally don't really understand that trade at all. So they got worse there. And, you know, Verlander's going to be coming back from surgery. Apparently it's going to be fine. I think he's back on track for, you know, regular, you know, full season work. Miguel Cabrera had surgery after basically limping to the end of the year last year. So, I mean, there's chinks in the armor, but there's still the team to beat. There's not, you know, until they're off the top, you know, that's who you got to beat. So there's still the class of the Central.
Yeah, and I agree with that. But I don't think they're as good as they were. I don't think the Royals have closed that much of a gap, but I think they're closer than they were last year. So take it as you will.
Maybe, I don't know. I don't know if the Royals improved enough to really do anything but kind of stay in the same distance that they were last year. Because I hate the Vargas signing. I don't think he's going to be above average any part of that contract. I just don't see it. He's been barely average in pitcher's parks, and he's only getting older. I just don't see it. The only thing that he has going for him is that the defense he's coming into this year is going to be better than any defense he's had behind him since.
Well, and I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I don't think he's going to be good either. Let me just put that out there.
You're not doing the devil's advocate side very well.
But with that said, did we think that Irvin Santana was going to be, you know, any good? Yes, he has had more.
I did.
Has to be. Did you release? Because I did.
Yeah.
I thought. We gave up nothing to get him. He's expensive, but if it works out, cool.
I like that trade. I mean, I you know, recognize.
Well, how could you not like the trade? I mean, even when it was made, only one person on Twitter was really anti that trade that I saw.
There were some.
Well, I think the difference is with Santana, you knew that at his best, he could be what he was last year, and at his worst, he could be what he was the year before. Whereas with Vargas, we know that at his best, he can be a slightly below average to maybe average pitcher. And so I think that's the difference. You know, like, I mean, Vargas wasn't a terrible signing. It's just signing him to be the number two pitcher is the problem. You know, the only thing I will say, I'll play devil's advocate here and say that I won't be that good at it either. But
yeah, it's just
it's hard to find that much bright side. But if you want to look at it and say, okay, last year with Irvin Santana pitching as well as he did, the Royals, how many times did we say, you know, oh, if they just had an average right fielder and second baseman, then they'd be so much better, five games better, whatever it is. Well, you know, they got that right fielder and second baseman, so maybe they're five games better, but then they're taking those five games right back by switching out Santana for Vargas. And yeah, I'm not talking strictly war because it doesn't exactly work out that way, but you get my point. You know, whatever they gain in the Aoki and Fonte signing, they're kind of losing with Vargas v. Santana. So ultimately, it's kind of like you said, Mike, it just evens out. So now you're sitting there and it's like, oh, you're about that, you know, 85, 86 win team. It's going to be fun. It's going to be competitive, but they're just not going to be quite there. It seems anyway.
Yeah. I mean, stranger things have happened. I mean, I'm more than happy if he proves me wrong. I'm totally okay with that. I'll take the playoffs. But I just don't see it happening, at least with him. I mean, I really still, even though they got Chen, I still think that another proven pitcher would be nice to have. And, you know, they don't really have that. So
I don't know. I'm not in with Flanagan on this. I think sometimes his articles are a little crazy, or maybe they're a little bit trolling. Let me put it that way. And I'm not taking anything from him as a writer. He's got a great job, and any one of us would love to have it. And so he's earned it. He's got it. But I do think he kind of trolls the fan base. So.
Well, there was last year, I think it was just before the May meltdown or something, that he was talking about, what do you think of that James Shields trade now, haters, or something like that. I don't remember what the article was actually titled, but it was something to that effect, where it was basically like taunting the people who didn't like that trade, or at least who, you know, I like getting Shields. I didn't like giving that up. You know, I didn't think it was going to be enough. And his kind of premise of that article was that he's going to be able to do it, you know, all year, and he's going to be the guy. You know, and yeah, he was great, but, you know, it was still like 5 weeks of a season to judge off of, and that was about it. So, I don't know. He does have his moments.
I'm going to combine two things together. One we're going to talk some about, one we're not going to talk too much about. But both Alcides Escobar and Mike Moustakas have sworn that they're going to have more play discipline. I agree with Kevin. Can we just avoid the Mike Moustakas topic for right now? It's just drawn out and tired, and I just don't want to talk about Mike Moustakas until he takes an at-bat sometime in April. Let me talk to me in April about how he's playing.
We'll talk about Mike Moustakas when he gives us something to talk about.
Thank you. I'm sure the other guys will probably talk about it. They've all done a great job with the podcast, and I'm so far behind. But one of them, Aaron Reese, who writes for KC Kingdom, has a great article, February 24th at 2 p.m. He wrote about, and this one's on Fansided, it's on KCKingdom.com, Alcides Escobar patience could make things worse. Alcides Escobar has said that he's going to see more pitches. Now, the problem with this, according to Aaron's article, is Escobar hit 366 with a 512 slugging and an 078 OPS on first pitches last season. If he got the first pitch strike, he only hit 235 with a 259 slugging on the next pitch. So, for whatever reason, he seemed to not do well with a strike against him. In fact, this was even a problem on counts where it was 2-0 and 2-1, according to this article. But there's much more from Aaron. Aaron's a member of the Triple Play podcast, and I actually need to get a tweet out to my friends in Arizona. They did like 15 minutes on the differences between some of the pitchers and what have you, and they talked, and why am I having a brain fart here? They talked for 15 minutes about the Diamondback signing from last week, and I was like, I got to send that over to my Arizona friends, because they really did a good job of breaking down the Diamondbacks pitching staff. I was pretty impressed with it, figuring that it's a Royals podcast, and they did that well, breaking that down.
Yeah, I get Reese's point on you know, talking about Escobar and kind of what he did last year based off of, you know, pitches beyond the first pitch. Over his career, it hasn't been nearly as stark of a difference. So I'm not as worried about it. Plus, I think if it might just be defining it as patience versus selection. You know, if he's more selective, you know, that's okay. But if he's just going up there thinking, okay, first pitch, well, other pitchers can exploit that, because it's always kind of that cat and mouse thing. I know that you know that you know, and if you know that Alcides Escobar has a tendency to jump on the first pitch, well, maybe you test him. Maybe you give him a pitcher's pitch to see what he goes after, if he'll chase it. And if he chases it, maybe he gets weak contact, and then, you know, you're eliminating that one advantage he may have had. Now, if he knows to lay off of that pitch and can, you know, get his approach right the rest of the way, then I think that's a good thing. But it could be something that, you know, over the course of his career, he hasn't had that big of a difference in those counts. Maybe that's a bad sign that he's regressing. Maybe it's just one season where things didn't go right. You know, I don't think he was as bad. I don't think he'll be as bad as he was last year. I don't think he'll necessarily be as good as he was in 2012. So somewhere in the middle of that, and his career numbers really kind of average out to that. So, you know, I think it's important to kind of look at it, and it's definitely something worth questioning. But I don't think it's going to be as drastic this year as it was last year.
Yeah, and I kind of fall along the same lines, and I kind of talked about this with Aaron on Twitter when he kind of brought up the idea before he actually wrote the article. And it was something where I talked to him just like what you were talking, Mike, about
You know, maybe the Royals, who are notoriously bad at simple things like terminology, maybe it's they say patience when they mean selection. And that's the only issue I had with his premise, was that it was based on this assumption that patience for Alcides Escobar meant that he was all of a sudden Hal McRae and he's never going to swing at the first pitch. You know, I don't know that I necessarily agreed with that. From the context of the article in which I read it, it seemed more like they were really talking about selection versus patience. But, I mean, they did say patience, so if you're going to go that route, then that's fine. But even if you want to say, using the word patience, and you want to kind of drill down into it, that still doesn't necessarily mean don't ever swing at a first pitch. You know, it just means something to the, you know, make sure that that first pitch is yours. Make sure that it's what you want. You know, it's what you're comfortable with hitting, instead of getting to that point where, you know, oh, it's, you know, it's a fastball, I got to swing at it, I got to hit it, I got to hit this, I got to hit, you know, I mean, there, I think that's kind of what, and you heard him kind of talk about the same thing with when Hosmer was having his struggles back in 2012 in the early part of last year, you know, the trying to get it all back in one swing and that type of a thing. When you get into that mindset, that's where patience goes out the window. And I think you could see, and you heard from a lot of scouts last year that I've seen, at least in articles that people have heard from scouts, that would say it really looked like he was trying hard. It really looked like he was pressing, like he was, you know, really wanted to be in there and hit last year. And so I think they're just trying to kind of scale that back and say, just relax and play your game and, you know, don't worry about, and, you know, I mean, a lot of it is probably the Royals doing as well, because, you know, whether you want to believe it or not, when you put a player up in the number two spot, you're kind of putting a little bit of extra pressure on him. I mean, I think that I come from the school of thought in which, if you're from a player's perspective, it shouldn't matter, because you just go up there and you have your approach, whether you're first or whether you're ninth. But at the same time, the reality of the situation is, you know, you understand that there is some pressure being put on you by your team to produce at that position. So they had him hitting, you know, spots a lot more up higher in the order that, you know, I don't think was necessarily conducive for his skill set, obviously, but also didn't help with the mental state when he's really struggling and they're still putting him up there and he keeps trying to want to succeed. And so I think that's kind of what they're talking about. You know, I'll give the benefit of the doubt to the Royals in this situation, even though they in no way absolutely deserve it. But I will say, I do think that's kind of what they're talking about, just scaling that back and putting him lower in the order and making sure that, you know, he's comfortable with the at-bat, he's comfortable with his approach, and he knows that when he swings, it's because he wants to, not because he feels he has to.
They got to make something work, because, like Kevin was saying, if Aoki turns out not to be good and Escobar continues to be outright bad, then we're going to have problems.
Yeah, I think if Escobar is even approachingly average as the number nine hitter with his defense, that's a really valuable player. I mean, you can live with that. If he's the train wreck he was last year, then that's, you know, a little less valuable overall. I mean, then he's just the defensive player and out machine the rest of the time.
Well, we'll see. I doubt about covers that. Well, I think on that note, then, for those of you that are listening on Our City Radio, which is awesome, and they're doing a good focus for putting our show on the internet radio, you are now hearing the end of our show. Check us out at royalspodcast.com. We're actually going to continue, for those of you on the podcast, we're actually going to talk about some things that happened in March on the other side that may or may not be baseball related. Trust me, they're not. But we'll be, for those of you listening on Our City Radio, thank you for listening. We hope that you'll listen to us every week on Our City Radio, and we'll be back next week with Jeff and Mike. For everybody else, hang on. We'll be right back on the other side.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kicking in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
So we're back in here. And I want to, if you're listening just for baseball, you can go ahead and turn it off, because I don't want to talk baseball for the next 2 minutes. It's February, and after February is March, and I love this time of year. And if in case you were having trouble with the calendar, I was helping you out there as well. But I love this time of year because so many things happen. The first part of February, you get the Super Bowl, which is great, you know. And then last night, I was watching a wrestling pay-per-view because it's my, as I tell people, it's my male soap opera I'm allowed. And I have some fun with it and what have you. And I know that wrestling's fake and all that jazz, but it was good. And then, but on the other side, Daytona was being rain delayed, which makes me laugh. But I'm also a bit of a NASCAR fan. I've been a Tony Stewart and Dale Jr. fan for a long time, and Daytona comes. And the thing is, the Super Bowl happens, and then Daytona happens, and then spring training happens, and then you have baseball, and that's all great and everything. But it also opens. This is the time of year that if you're just a general sports fan, it's the best time of year because you get baseball and you get Daytona and you get spring training if you're into baseball enough to care about spring training. But then you get March Madness, and you know, having spent 7 years in Kansas City, I love March because I get excited to see how far K-State and Mizzou and KU are going to go because I've, you know, follow these teams. This year, Nebraska is actually making enough noise that they might get to, that they might actually make it to the dance, or they're at least going to be on the bubble. On top of that, Creighton is playing as good at basketball as they probably ever have right now. They didn't start out the year real well, but right now they're probably one of the most dangerous teams in basketball. And if I was any of those teams I just mentioned, I would not want to play Creighton in the tournament right now. I think they could go toe-to-toe with about anybody. And so they're looking good. Plus, now I live in Albuquerque, which is home of University of New Mexico, and New Mexico basketball is a big deal here. It's New Mexico basketball is every bit as big of a deal in Albuquerque as KU basketball is in Lawrence. And
let's not get crazy.
Well, I mean, it's a big deal here. Okay, that's a really big deal. It's lowered expectations. And I was thinking about this today, and I was going to tweet it, and I hadn't. But I was thinking about this today. You know, it's interesting when you think about different fan bases when it comes to college basketball. Because I listen to Sports Talk here, and they've only got two local shows on the station I listen to. And they're, of course, at Drive Time Morning and Drive Time Night. And I was listening to those shows, and it's funny because they talk about how, with the win over San Diego State, New Mexico had cemented what was probably a bid into the tournament anyways. They could get the automatic bid for the Mountain West yet, but most likely they'll end up as a wild card. San Diego State will get the automatic bid, unless they beat San Diego State in San Diego, which could be crazy at the end of the season. But San Diego State was ranked sixth, and they came into the pit, which is where New Mexico plays. It's the auditorium, whatever, the basketball state, quote-unquote arena, stadium, whatever you want to call it, at the University of New Mexico. They call it the pit, just like the Fog is Allen Fieldhouse, and I don't know the other ones, guys. I'm sorry. K-State and Wichita State and Mizzou fans, I don't know what your arenas are called. But I don't.
Bramlage, I know that.
They just call it Bramlage. That's right. So there's another one there. We got three of them. That's as much as we're going to do. Anyways, so they come into the pit, and I still haven't had a chance because I've been so busy the last couple of days to look, but I'm not sure San Diego State ever led in that game. And they were ranked sixth going in, and New Mexico wasn't ranked. New Mexico is ranked now. I don't know where, but I know they are ranked now after that game. But they absolutely dominated San Diego State. They led by more than 20 points at one point, and New Mexico has looked really, really good going in. So I am so excited for March Madness this year because KU's expectation to make the Final Four is what they expect every year. New Mexico is the fans here are talking about how this team could make it to the Sweet 16, and that's a really big deal here. Nebraska ball fans are talking about how they might make the tournament. You know, that's a big deal. Creighton fans are talking about the Sweet 16. K-State fans are talking about the Sweet 16. Mizzou fans might win a game. They're really excited about that. And I'm not hating on Mizzou fans. It's a fact. It's a tortured group of Twitter fans. I feel really bad for people that are Mizzou and Royals fans because I don't know how many more combo fan bases there could be that are as tortured as those two because Mizzou fans are either super, super jealous or just super sad all the time. Like, they just never can see how their team is going to pull off the big win. And then sometimes they do, and they're the most joyous group of people you'll ever meet. And sometimes they don't, and then they just all really need a beer. And it's a good group of people.
Go take a walk.
Right. And the ones that follow me and that I follow back are really good people.
Yeah.
And they're not all really good people, but the ones that do follow me and what have you are pretty good people. And, you know, with the exception of Kamler.
Sure.
You know, that's understood. By the way, if you have not heard Kamler on Ben and Audra's show, oh my God, you have to hear that. So go find that at royalspodcast.com. It was awesome. That's all I'm going to say about that. I was laughing so hard. I thought Audra was going to kill him.
She might.
Anyways, go listen to that. It's pretty funny. But obviously, you two are KU fans, so basketball to you is a big deal. I'm a Nebraska fan. I've never hid that. College football is what I live and die by when it comes to the college sports, and Nebraska has continually made me sad for a while now because they haven't even been really honestly competitive, and I don't think they will be under Bo Pelini, but that's for another day. But being KU fans and, you know, talking about expectations, am I wrong to say that every year, even when you guys try to say this is the worst team KU's ever had, they're not gonna be a real contender? You know, those are the years that KU seems to be the best because Bill Self goes, you want to bet? But when you guys get ready for a season as KU fans, do you ever expect your team to be worse than a Final Four? Like, isn't that the expectation every year for KU?
God, that's pretty much been it ever since Self's been around. He's such a better recruiter than Roy Williams was because he's always recruiting, whereas Roy would go year on, year off, basically, as far as like pulling in big names and whatnot. So they've always got like top guys on the team, and even, you know, when it's a couple of years ago where where KU lost to Kentucky in the championship game, you know, that was just a really tough team and with a lot of experience that, you know, Bill Self was able to make work and really kind of mold in his image, tough defensive team. And so, yeah, I mean, they've been to the tournament every year, you know, since 89, like every single year in a row. They're pretty likely to win their 10th straight conference championship, which is pretty ridiculously unheard of in a major conference. So, yeah, I mean, that's the expectation. You expect them to make the tournament. You expect them to get 20, 25 wins, and you expect them to go, you know, into the, you know, at least Sweet 16, Elite 8, even if it's a, you know, a lower talent team.
Jeff, I heard you kind of pull back on that. Do you feel differently?
If you want to talk Final Four, then I feel differently. Like, I think there's an expectation that KU competes on that level and that they're a top 10, top 15 team every year. Like, you see from a lot of the KU fan base, especially when they have years, and they've had them even in Bill Self's reign, where they'll start the season ranked, you know, 23rd or something like that in the first preseason poll, and people will be like, oh, it's too low, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, for me, especially the last couple of years, really, I mean, the last time, 2000, 2011 season was, I think, really the last time where I was like, man, this is a Final Four team where they had the Morris twins and they had Thomas Robinson and they had that, you know, just that whole crew was still together. But yeah, these last couple of years, even that year they made it to the Final Four, I remember I had a discussion at a bar with some friends and this girl I'm friends with, she said, I guarantee it, they're going to make the Final Four. And I was like, you are ridiculous. I ended up losing that bet. and then, you know, last year, they had a pretty good season. I didn't think they had it, but there was another one of those situations where the last couple of years have been teams where, you know, they really haven't had, like, this is going to sound whiny, I guess, but it's all relative. There have been some years where, you know, I mean, KU always gets a lot of really good recruits, obviously, but there have been years where they don't have, you know, any guys that are even, like, top 30 recruits. And so, like, again, that sounds kind of pretentious because, you know, old KU people, you know, but at the same time, you know, people say, oh, well, KU gets the top guys every year. And it's like, well, you know, there are some years where they kind of get shut out of those top really elite players. And I mean, you say, what about like Ben McLemore? I mean, if you look at the final recruiting rankings, I believe his final ranking was like 33, according to Rivals, you know, and the Morris twins, neither of them were top 30 recruits, and nobody in that class was you know, any higher than that. So while they're still all good players and top 100 recruits, you know, it's not like it's, you know, Kentucky and you're getting five top 10 players every year, and even they have their issues. But but Bill Self has proven, which is what I'm driving at here, that he's proven, you know, over the last, especially the last couple of years, that even without those elite, even without the Andrew Wiggins guys, you can still, he's going to still coach a team to be a one seed, two seed level team. And that's something that, even though Roy Williams got to the tournament every year that he was here, except for his first year, you know, he still had those kind of dips where, I mean, you had the Kenny Gregory years. I mean, those were pretty lean.
You know, Brian Nash.
Yeah, KU. I remember KU was an 8 seed one year, and yeah. I mean, they almost beat Duke in their second round to their credit, but
they barely beat DePaul that year. They went to overtime that year.
Yeah, and they had, and you had. I mean, Roy Williams has had his issues at North Carolina, too. They've had years where they haven't made the tournament or they've been lower seeds. You know, last year they were an 8 seed and KU beat them. And so it's been really quite remarkable. I don't know if I will say that every year I'm thinking Final Four, but every year I'm thinking they can compete on that level. So it's just a matter of if they can be consistent enough and get it at, you know, at the right time, because – I mean, I talk about 2010, they were, I mean, what was it, 32-2 going into the tournament, and they lose to Northern Iowa in the second round. So, I mean, I thought that was a Final Four team, and, you know, the worst result kind of happened. So, it's, you look and I've always said, you know, the two most important factors for me have always been three-point shooting and free-throw shooting in terms of tournament. So, I look at, you know, like teams from the last couple of years, and even this team, I don't think this team is going to make it to the Final Four, even if I think they can be a Final Four team, just because I don't think they shoot it well enough. So, you know, it's, I think there's largely the fan base might say every year Final Four, but for me personally, and I think for a lot of the more realistic people, it's definitely tournament is a given every year as an expectation, and kind of Sweet 16 is a given, if you will. I mean, that again, that sounds bad, but I mean, that if you want to talk in terms of what we're expecting, for me, I pretty much expect at least Sweet 16 level every year. And then, you know, so that's kind of a, I mean, considering you're talking about how big of a deal people are talking about New Mexico being a Sweet 16 team, so I mean, that's the level of expectation that I typically have.
Well, I think it's really cool, and that's why I wanted to talk about this. And I'm not, for those of you that are KU haters or Mizzou fans or whatever, I'm not trying to make this about KU, because it's not. But the two guys that co-host with me are KU fans. You know, I absolutely invite you. I will do this as a segment for the next month and a half, until the end of basketball season. If there is somebody out there that wants to come on and talk about Mizzou and K-State basketball, we'll do a 5-minute segment every week, and I'll have you on, and we'll do it. And I have no problem talking Mizzou and K-State on this show, or Wichita State. I'm sorry. Let me back up. Wichita State, too. I'm not forgetting about you, even though I think you're overrated. But that's for another podcast.
You can email him
at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. You can let me have all your thoughts. I've been open about it on Twitter. I'm not trying to disrespect Wichita State, but that conference is horrible. And until they actually play, Creighton did them, and I'm not a big Creighton fan. I'm one of those people that apparently is against the rules. I root for both Nebraska and Creighton because they're not rivals, and they're both from Nebraska, and that's the state I was born in. And it's, to me, it's no different than if KU was really good in one sport and the Ruse were really good in another sport. It'd be like if KU was really good at football and the Ruse were really good at basketball, it'd be no different. It'd be no different than KU fans rooting for the Ruse. It'd be no different to me. So we can have that conversation for another day too, because I don't see Creighton and Nebraska as rivals. So, but anyways, I think this is going to be a great month for sports fan. It's going to be a great month for me because I live in a city that's getting amped up right now for the tournament in Albuquerque. I think UNM is going to be better than they were last year, and their Twin Towers have been absolutely amazing. And when they played KU in Sprint Center, they really played them the first half, and then they just got overtaken the second half. But they looked like a good team. And San Diego State beat KU this year.
In Lawrence.
And the Lobos handled San Diego State. Granted, it was in Albuquerque, but it'll be interesting to see what they do in San Diego. Now, with that said, basketball is all about matchups. More than any other sport, it's about matchups. And one team, you know, a number one seed could get beat by a low seed simply based on matchups, whereas that one seed may not lose to a number two seed who could easily handle the low seed in question. So that's one of the great things about the tournament. And a lot of people hate the tournament because it doesn't necessarily get the best teams to the championship, but it sure is great for the fans. And really it's great for 66 programs every year that get a chance to play for the whole damn thing. Even if they don't legitimately have a shot, they're at least in there, you know. Even if you go in as a 16 seed,
VCU is a play-in game. So
yeah.
So they made the Final Four that year.
So I don't know. I'm excited for the tournament to get here this year a little more than I've been in years past, and I think it's going to be fun. I think New Mexico is going to be fun to watch. I think if Mizzou can get hot, I think they'll be an interesting team if they make the tournament, which I think they should. And you never know, though. And people go, well, how could you think that New Mexico wasn't going to make it before the San Diego State game? Because Texas Tech missed in a year that they should have been a lock, you know, because other things have happened. And it just – stuff happens with the tournament, and good teams get left out. And so, obviously, there's teams like KU that this year are so good that they don't have to worry, even if they didn't win the Big 12, which they have managed to do every year. The last time that the KU didn't, I saw this tweeted, and I like the quote. The last time that KU didn't win the Big 12, there was 12 teams in the Big 12. So there's that. I mean, it's pretty incredible what they've done. I think what Mizzou's done with SEC basketball is pretty awesome too the last couple of years, and I really hope they can get a good run and get into the tournament. You know, K-State, they're a good team. They may be good enough to make the tournament. I think that would be awesome. And then obviously Wichita State's going to make it, and they're going to get a hell of a seed. They could get in as a one seed,
they should get a one seed,
which hopefully doesn't make them turn into the first team to blow that one seed, which I don't think they will. I'm not that far down on them. I just don't know who they are. That's my problem with Wichita State right now. And I don't know that if they ran into a New Mexico as an 8 seed, or a K-State as an 8 seed, or a Mizzou as an 8 seed, or 8 or 9 seed or somebody like that, or New Mexico, if I didn't already say that, if they ran into one of those teams as a mid-level seed, I think they could be in trouble. But we don't really know because they haven't played anybody. But they've done something that the history books will write about, and they're 29-0, and that's really cool. But we'll see what that real team is come March. And they better win the conference tournament. Otherwise, there's going to be a heck of a lot of questions heading into the tournament. So I'm excited, obviously. I wanted to talk a little bit about basketball because I was thinking about it on the way home today about how fan expectations are so different. And to be a KU basketball fan must be what it was like in the 90s with Nebraska, and just really expecting that, you know, it didn't matter. Before the first game was even played, you were already looking at a top five team. And of course, football is different because one loss just knocks you out of it. But man, with basketball, you guys, you're always looking at that Final Four, you know, that Final Four matchup eventually. And the Sweet 16 is cool, but almost a disappointment. Whereas teams like New Mexico are stoked to get to the Sweet 16, and teams like Nebraska are just happy to make the damn tournament. So I'm really stoked for it. I'm about as stoked for March Madness this year as I am for opening day. Almost, but opening day is still a little bit ahead. If you haven't already, please go vote Royal, man. You're not voting. You're just watching my video. Last I checked, it was at about 12:50. We haven't heard anything. You will hear this show, I think, before we hear anything. I don't think we hear anything till Friday, the 28th, I think that is. I think that's when we hear. And there's some rumors that they've contacted people. It's hard to say what those contacts were about and the validation of the rumors. I know people that were contacted before things even opened, and I know MTV has a hand in it this year. So it may be entirely different, and this thing may be – I know MTV's helping with the casting, but who knows, this thing could end up on MTV this year with as bad as TV's been. Who knows, they may grab onto a show like this. So I don't know what's happening with it. I don't know. But it will be a one-and-done situation for me. If I don't make it this year, I doubt that I will try next year just because I'm 33 years old. I really shouldn't even be – this is – you have to be 21 to get in the cave, but this is for somebody in their 20s. And if I make it, I'm going to be the happiest damn 33-year-old on the planet. but if I don't, you know, I'm going to be sad. But my life goes on, and I have a beautiful wife. And we have great plans for ourselves and our family, and we're putting them all on hold until this thing develops. And if I make it until it's over, you know, we're putting our whole lives on hold. We're literally, you know, we were talking about starting to focus on having children a month ago. And because things just fell into place and there was a real shot at me, you know, making a run for the fan cave, we put that on hold. So that's a little insight into my life. We have really put our lives on hold to make a run at the fan cave. So I hope I make it, you know, and if I do, I do. If I don't, you know, that's going to suck. But, man, if I do, it's going to be awesome. I hope I hear something by Friday. If you haven't, like I said, if you haven't been to the video, please go watch it, www.voteroyalman.com. It's just my YouTube video. We're hoping that hits matter. They have in years past. We're up to 1,261 with views, 176 likes, and 2 dislikes. There's 2 dislikes on every major fan cave audition video. So figure that one out.
Troy is a huge Royals fan.
I hope
so.
I make
much
it.
So he became a Royals super fan.
That's just all I can say. And, you know, I'm going to appreciate the process no matter what. Hopefully I can find out what they didn't like if I don't make it. But on that note, do you guys have anything else, baseball or otherwise?
We were going to talk about the waffle taco, which looks awesome.
Is that one of the new things that Taco Bell is going to offer?
I'm sure.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I
thought
yes, I saw people talking about it, and it sounded like a funny name. So,
well, I saw that they were going to offer a few things for breakfast when we were driving back from Vegas, and I didn't know if it was a national thing or not. But apparently, yes, it is. It is prepared to go national. Hold on, let me bring up this LA Times article that was wrote 5 hours ago. That seems current enough.
They should change the name of Walk Off Talk to Waffle Taco. Should get sponsorship.
Taco Bell. Go. The Waffle Taco brought to you by Taco Bell.
Brought to you by the Waffle Taco. Posted on Bob Blob's Bob Blob Blog.
Bob Blob 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 Blog.
When we were driving through, the only thing that was being offered at a lot of them for breakfast was the AM Crunchwrap. which that is going to be part delicious. Of this. But it really does.
I
will tell you this.
Get up, man. It looks delicious.
It really does. I'm trying to find some information more than they have on this. There's a waffle taco, there's the AM Crunch Wrap, and there's going to be breakfast burritos. It's going to be served from around 7 or earlier until 11 a.m. at more than 5,500 restaurants.
Yeah.
It is available in New Mexico, and I'm pretty sure it's available in Arizona. So if you're traveling to spring training, if they don't have it in Kansas and Missouri yet, or wherever you happen to be, you might be able to find it there. But, yeah, Taco Bell, who's owned by Yum Foods, who owns Pizza Hut and A&W and Long John Silver's and KFC, I think that's all of them. They own a lot of major restaurants you've heard of. But I'll tell you this. I have a Taco Bell addiction. It's part of the reason I got fat again. I love me some Taco Bell. I'm not surprised. I wouldn't be surprised at all if I stopped at Taco Bell. But I feel really guilty every time I do. Not because it's bad for me, but because there is so much better food in New Mexico that is quote-unquote Mexican. So there's no reason that that I should be eating that. That's my wife calling. So do you guys have anything else?
The McRib's still out. No, let's go.
Okay. Until next week, Jeff and Mike have it next week. For those two, I'm Troy. I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. They'll talk to you next week. Go Royals.